Everybody's ego takes a shot on this show.
You gotta keep your chill with Jim, Matt, and Molly.
I am savage.
So you're not special.
Jim, if we want to play this game, we can play this game.
And I'm just like, oh so, my god, this guy's so gonna swing on right. Jim.
He's a complicated fellow.
People like me.
Yeah, I don't think so.
This is Jim, Matt, and Molly. Presented by Coors Light on 100.5 ESPN.
We're learning a lot about each other.
I'm going to match your energy, and if you're going to bring false titles, I'll bring false titles.
That is absolutely ridiculous.
Amen.
Because I'm here for whatever.
It's kind of a roller coaster. Sports is a roller coaster.
Matt, let me ask you a question.
Wait, I don't understand. Yeah. Your family never told you don't take candy from strangers.
I wasn't going in alone. I was four. I don't know. I don't know why this is a big deal.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison, alongside America's favorite Alex, Alex Gravatt, here's Jim Rutledge.
It is hour number two of Jim, Matt, and Molly. We are presented by Coors Light. Alex G, if the mountains are blue, you know what to do.
And that's Crush a Coors Light.
He is Alex G.
Is that better?
Yeah. I am Jim Rutledge. Primetime will always shine behind the glass. And Chrissy Birdsall was here in the Everlight Solar Studio.
Just got up and walked away.
I don't blame her. I blame Ryan for that.
Okay.
100%.
I told her to leave.
We had a Siding Unlimited poll question yesterday that I wanted to circle back on as well. Who does a better job of hiring assistant coaches, Dan Campbell with the Lions or Matt LaFleur with the Packers? Dan Campbell ran away with that at 76.2%, took LaFleur at 24%. We will see a linebackers coach isn't necessarily an assistant, because that's going to be given to Hafley. I would assume the right thing to do with Jeff Hafley should be allowed to replace their linebackers coach who just went down to Jacksonville to be the coordinator.
Yeah, sure. And I think that the two will work closely together, probably with Goody. I mean, the whole squad will be in on trying to figure out exactly what needs to happen in that space. And it does worry me a little bit, because Edgerrin Cooper was making such huge strides that, you know, you hope that it's Edgerrin Cooper and not the Jacksonville defensive coordinator, but never know.
You're very... Oh. Packer fans are getting really excited about the defense. And so I want to ask this question. We can post this at ESPN Madison. Another Siding Unlimited poll question. You can chime in 844-770-3776. It's a Carlos talking text line. List is more. Do you think the Packers will be known more as a defensive team or an offensive team over the next 3 years?
Offense. They're going to be judged by their offense for sure. I mean,
I didn't say judged by. I said they're going to be known for.
Because of the history of Green Bay, the last 30 years, people are going to, and the shoes that Jordan Love has to.
We'll switch it up. What are they going to be better at?
What are they going to be better at? You hope it's offense.
Do you?
If it's not, Matt LaFleur is struggling.
Right, but what does that matter? You haven't won with a offense that's been, you know, at times elite. You haven't had an elite offense the last 2 years. But, under Rodgers, you had an elite offense.
Right, well,
you had a good offense the last 2 years.
Yeah. Last 3 years, because his last year was not good either. At a certain point, if the Packers are a middling offense for a couple years, especially if the defense gets better, you have to look at either Matt LaFleur or Jordan Love and say, what's going on? They also could use some more help, I think, across the board.
Yeah, and defense needs it as well. And I ask it because, all right, the outliers of the Mahomes sort of thing is there. But Philadelphia, they added three key players to their defense, and then Jalen Carter obviously blew up as well. So Philadelphia is known as much for their defense as their offense. It's Saquon Barkley and then Philadelphia's defense. That's why they're there. Jalen Hurts is obviously, he's not a game manager, but he is running the offense efficiently.
And the tush push. You know, that's a huge part of it, yeah.
So, and then you look at the Chiefs, their defense is really good.
Absolutely.
And you look at some of the other top teams out there. The Lions, now their defense failed them, but they were also oft injured. The 49ers, I would say even back to Jimmy G days, the defense was the dominance there. So you can be a team that gets to the Super Bowl with a dominant defense and above that. Again, the offense isn't going to be bad. I'm not talking about, hey, are you going to be the the Bears that played the Colts in the Super Bowl where the offense was abysmal, or the Ravens with Trent Dilfer where the offense was abysmal. No, I'm talking about, like, hey, the offense is good, but the defense is truly the calling card. Like, what will the Packers' calling card be, offense or defense?
It won't be offense, or it won't be defense, because if it becomes defense, it's going to be a one-and-done situation where Jeff Hafley goes and becomes a head coach somewhere else.
That's
a for-sure situation.
That's a great way to look at it, because you talk to any team that has a defensive-minded coach, well, and again, you look at Detroit right now, there's going to be consternation. I think Detroit's going to do a good job replacing their coaches. I think they have. It's all on paper, but having David Shaw and the player, the guy from Denver who coached with Dan Campbell before, like I think, and then they kept the rest of the offensive staff in place. Like, they had a good chance to do it. But, well, yes, when you are a non-offensive-minded head coach and you lose your OC, like, that is an immediate concern. It's one of the biggest things that works against some of those coaches.
The other thing is, if the Packers go out and have an awesome defensive season and a really subpar offensive season, does Jeff Hafley become the Packers head coach?
That almost never happens.
I know that it feels weird, but like,
but I mean, like, even if they fired LaFleur, the D coordinator, the head coach, it's just not really usually kind of clean the whole thing up.
Yeah, but it would feel like a wasted opportunity, especially if the Packers become a defense first.
Like, regularly, I'm trying to think, they would have to be like, what's their win loss? I mean, they'd have to be like 5 wins next year.
That's fair.
To move off of LaFleur.
That's fair.
And if the defense was that good, to go to Hafley, but. Ryan or G, I can't think of a time where a head coach like has taken over the team where they were the coordinator at before.
I'm Antonio not saying it's never. Pierce.
Yeah, but that was the interim thing.
But then he got the job after.
True.
That.
So I don't mean an interim thing. I mean, like,
so LaFleur being fired in the offseason because they had fell short in the postseason, yeah. And then being replaced by a guy on the staff.
Yeah. I know people floated that with Buffalo, like, oh, just fire McDermott and put Joe Brady as head coach. I'm saying it's not going to happen.
Is it just me, or do I take a lot? Like, if Jeff Hafley goes and he's the head coach for whatever, the Tennessee Titans or something like that, I'm going to root for them. I did not feel an ounce of interest in rooting for Hackett at all as he moved on and did his own thing. I was just like, whatever. I don't really. Good for them. It was side news. Jeff Hafley, kind of interesting. If he does, I'm rooting for him.
Were you asking just for coordinators who took over as the coach?
Yeah, like...
Or like an assistant could be as well.
Even an assistant, I'm trying to think of...
Patriots last year, Gerard Mayo.
But that was written in. I guess that was...
Okay, fair.
And they just... And they regret it writing that in.
I'm not saying it was a good move, but you're asking where that scenario, so, but I mean, that's
like,
the only one.
But this is the scenario, like... But this one is LaFleur's fired. So I'm trying to think of this specific scenario. It's a good example.
Belichick was fired.
Okay, but... however you want to look at that one, he didn't necessarily... It just seems incredibly rare.
It's rare. You're 100% right, but I thought of it and I wanted to.
No, it's a good one. It's a good one. Because it also points out that, obviously, I don't know why the Patriots wrote that into the Gerard Mayo's. I think they expected maybe 3 or 4 more years out of Belichick.
Robert Kraft thought he was really smart, I think. He thought he had groomed like a perfect sort of coach in waiting.
And I think Gerard Mayo has every opportunity to be a good head coach in the future.
Maybe.
I mean, it's just... I mean, Belichick's the guy who failed miserably in Cleveland and then worked in New England. So
yeah. I'm really curious to see how he does in North Carolina.
Did you? I actually saw a story this afternoon that apparently North Carolina's a basketball game this weekend. And to help get the students riled up, Belichick's going to be bringing pizzas to all the fraternities around Chapel Hill.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. He college Belichick is going to be fun.
Okay, I'm actually interested. Like, that's a good move for him.
What if it's just like the movie Old School, which was shot at UW-Madison's campus? Belichick just like as Rodney Dangerfield in Chapel Hill. That might be what it ends up being.
Wait, what movie did you reference?
Not Old School.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know what you're talking
Will
about.
Ferrell, the other
one. Yeah, because you said Rodney Dangerfield, Back to School.
Back to School.
Yes, and I was running all that through my brain, and then you said Rodney Dangerfield, and that he was not an Old School. Back to School is a good movie. Good poll. But yes, so do you know the...
I have not seen it.
So Back to School is Rodney Dangerfield. I'm trying to remember. Was he like a business owner who decided to go back to school with his son because his son thought less of him because he didn't graduate college? So
I just remember he went back to school with his son. That's all I remember.
Yeah, I think it was because I think he was highly successful and his son didn't respect him, so he decided to go back to school, and it's like a guy in his 50s in college.
Oh, he's got crazy eyes.
Rodney Dangerfield?
Yeah.
Rodney Dangerfield is underrated funny.
All right.
Especially if you don't know who he is.
I gotta go and give that a look, because also I'm really excited to see movies where like Wisconsin things are highlighted. I loved that 70s show just because it had Wisconsin ties to it.
844-770-3776. And in honor of Green and Gold, the movie coming out today, we had the director on yesterday. You can chime in 844-770-3776 on the Carbless Talk and text line. List is more. What movies were filmed in Wisconsin? Just chime in. Like, you can just tell us. We know some of them. But JB from the V chimes in with the double Lindy, which is a reference to the movie Back to School. But what movies were shot in Wisconsin? Public Enemy is a big one up in Columbus. That was the Johnny Depp Bonnie and Clyde movie.
I know it was in Oshkosh as well.
It was in Oshkosh too? Yeah. Yep.
The one that... So when I tell people I'm from Wisconsin, I'm from Sheboygan County, Plymouth, Wisconsin, right? And I oftentimes go with Sheboygan because it's a little bit more pull, the Plymouth, the cheese capital of the world. Thank you very much. And I tell people that I'm from, people specifically in my age range, I'm from the same town as Chicken Joe from the movie Surf's Up. Which
I don't understand any of those words.
Okay. Cool.
But do you, Ryan, Primetime?
I remember Surf's. That's the Disney movie, right?
It's an animated film. I don't know if it's Disney or not.
Animated. Yeah. Okay, I'm thinking of a different one.
Okay, it's penguins surfing. Oh, and there's a chicken. Yes. And most people remember that I talked to. But Chrissy gives me the horns up, surprisingly. Go Texas, I guess. Oh, hang loose. There it is. But my girlfriend thinks that I'm a crazy person for saying that. And it sounds like you're on her side because she doesn't believe anybody knows that show or that movie. And so she says it's the people in Home Alone when they get out of the airport and they get on the bus and they're like, we're going to Sheboygan. And they're playing the polka in the back. And that's what she uses to refer to the area of Wisconsin that I'm from.
All right. That's wild.
Wait, you don't refer to the area of Wisconsin you're from as the place where they give out Oreos at the dry cleaner?
I will now.
Yeah, I mean, that should
that's
be.
That's the new one.
It's
yeah.
pretty iconic. Everyone knows it, obviously, just as the guy Jim plays basketball with in the mornings.
Well, he didn't get it. Was he not getting his dry cleaning done at home when he was in college? Because that's probably around the time frame we're looking at.
Wouldn't be, honestly. There has to be other movies shot in Madison, I would think, or Milwaukee, right? I think Transformers was shot, like the third Transformers movie.
So I Googled this, Sadler Times with Happy Days, yep.
There you go.
There was one that is a giant misnomer, because I remember seeing Great Outdoors and then watching the credits sometime, I don't know why, and realizing that none of Great Outdoors was shot in Wisconsin, even though the movie takes place in Wisconsin. So we're not asking for movies that take place in Wisconsin that are actually shot in Wisconsin. All that beautiful scenery was in California. Major League, obviously, at least Miller Park, or not Miller Park, County Stadium was shot at in Wisconsin. Here's one I'm going to give you that I don't think anyone's going to get. It is The Last Kiss. Have you ever heard of that movie?
No.
It's a movie that I think you'd still enjoy. It stars Zach Braff and Rachel Bilson. It came out in 2006. It was filmed at the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. Filmed at Union Terrace, Bascom Hill, State Street, on State Street at UW-Madison campus.
I have heard of this, yes. Never seen the movie. Never liked Zach Braff.
You don't like Zach Braff?
Not really.
Scrubs? You got Zach Braff hair in your...
That's very true, yeah, actually.
In your video, your photo from earlier.
Good callback, yeah. Jimmy Ray and I.
Yes.
No, I think he was decent in Scrubs, but everything he's in other than that, he's just like...
Wait, what about Garden State?
I've never seen Garden State.
That's the one with Natalie Portman that he wrote, directed, and starred in.
Yeah, and I've heard it's super mediocre.
From who?
People who watch Garden State.
And who is that?
I can't remember who it was, I'll be honest. I don't know if I should trust their opinion either. I just remember somebody saying that once.
And you're just out on it.
Yeah, honestly. Sometimes that's all it takes.
I would say has a really good soundtrack.
Okay.
7.5 out of 10 on IMDb.
What do you remember from the soundtrack?
Let's see.
Oh, this is your specialty in movies too. I forget.
Yeah, well, this is not, the movies. It's got a very soundtrack of the era.
2005.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, let's see here, the songs. I'm not going to run them all. You guys aren't going to know the songs. Let's see here. Don't Panic from Coldplay. I Just Don't Think I'll Ever Get Over You by Colin Hay. He's got a couple songs by Colin Hay. The Shins, New Slang. Caring is Creepy by The Shins. So that's kind of the wheelhouse for those songs.
Bones sinking like stone.
I like the little head nod dance you had going. You just big smile like, this is it.
The only living boy in New York. So like the movie has this sort of kind of vibe to
it. This movie sounds very... This movie, the music based off the movie. Sounds very self-loathing and very elevator.
It's not self-loathing.
It gives me, like, Duluth, Minnesota vibes, honestly. Like, you know, Duluth. You got the pines. I think,
well,
like, almost hippocampus.
Would be, I would imagine, New Jersey.
That
yeah.
is.
Yeah. So, it's viewed as, for a soundtrack, it is viewed as one of those soundtracks that had put together a really good collection.
Nice. Okay.
So, whatever it's worth. Any other movies shot in Wisconsin? 844-770-3776.
Have we said Public Enemies yet?
Also, 920 chimes in. For its budget, Garden State was wildly successful. That's the first one I said.
Yeah, it was. Jeez.
Oh, sorry. I didn't remember. I was too locked on to my Chicken Joe animated
film.
That
was all of 6 minutes ago.
6 whole minutes? You think I have a memory that long? That's crazy.
You remember the Oreos at the dry cleaner?
Yeah.
I think you have a pretty good memory, to be honest.
Oh, man.
Has anyone said Back to School, Ryan?
I mean, I brought up Back to School.
That's how the conversation started.
It did. Yeah, I derailed us. I apologize, guys. We were having a good conversation, too.
Were we, though?
Yeah, I thought we were.
It was football-y.
It was very football-y.
Football.
It's a good question. It was a good question. Offense or defense?
You want to see a truly Wisconsin movie. If you guys heard of or seen the movie American Movie?
Maybe. It sounds vaguely
familiar.
It has
an 8 out of 10 on IMDb. It is, let me just pull it up. If you know, you know on this one. I took a lot of documentary filmmaking classes and these sorts of things in college.
Oh, cool.
But no, I'm just saying that's why I had to watch it. But it's really good. But it's also really bad. I don't know. So here, American Movie is a 1999 American documentary film directed by Chris Smith and Sarah Prince. Filmed between September 1995 and August 1997, American Movie documents the making of Coven, an independent short horror film directed by Mark Borchardt. And basically, it is these Wisconsin guys. Here, Mark Borchardt of Menominee Falls dreams of being a professional filmmaker. Currently, however, he delivers newspapers for a living. Is deeply indebted, still lives with his parents, suffers from alcoholism, and is estranged from his ex-girlfriend, who is threatening to move out of state with their 3 children, due in part to his inability to pay child support. He acknowledges his various failures, but aspires to one day to make more out of his life. Then he tries to make a movie, and it's a documentary about his attempt to make a movie. It's really good to watch. It's fascinating. The quotes would say, funny and affectionate, and immersely entertaining. I would recommend, I don't know where in God's green earth you can find the movie, but American Movie I would recommend. And that movie is shot in Menominee Falls in that area in Wisconsin.
94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's a pretty good rating. What did Garden State have on Rotten Tomatoes?
I had 7.5 on IMDb. I don't have Rotten
Tomatoes. He says.
The picture of mediocrity.
Was any of that Jeffrey Dahmer docu-series?
The show?
Yeah.
No way. That was definitely shot probably in like LA or in California.
I imagine.
Yeah.
Happened here.
Oh, I mean, a lot of the stuff that they do in movies happened here.
We're a weird place.
We are.
We're a weird place.
Yeah, isn't part of Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of attached to...
Isn't it Texas?
No, it's... What's this? It's the
Ed Gein
stuff. No, like the
idea behind it.
A compilation. Oh. And so the skin thing.
Inspired by Ed Gein, and he did all of his stuff in Wisconsin in the 50s. So
there was a movie that Steve Martin was in. It was called Novocaine, filmed in Cedarburg, Wisconsin. It was also filmed in Chicago and Geneva, Illinois, but Novocaine is about a dentist who becomes a murder suspect after a patient steals drugs from his practice. But that was filmed in Cedarburg, Wisconsin.
Fascinating.
Yep, that one came out in 2001.
920 chimes in. For its budget, Garden State, wildly successful.
Ryan, what are we doing right now?
It could be a mediocre movie, and maybe it did well for its budget.
No, I'm saying I literally read that text 90 seconds ago.
Oh, well. Yeah, G's not very... I don't know. We should just go to break. G needs a break.
And then JB from the V says, Bloodhook, best movie filmed in Wisco, up near Hayward.
Bloodhook.
Maybe I'll watch that before I go on vacation up there. All right, we got to get pole dancing next segment. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly, presented by Coors Light.
Hey, this is Matt's Chicago doppelganger. You're listening to Jim, Matt, and Molly, presented by Coors Light on 100.5 ESPN Madison.
¶¶
believe Chrissy Birdsall's favorite song. You want to chime in on that one, Chrissy?
Yeah, so Alex G and I were having a conversation earlier when I came in, and I said this is objectively not that good of a song.
It's a good song.
It's not.
It has survived. It's 400 and some days on the top charts in the UK, which I know, or not days, weeks. Like, I know that's not like super relevant to us, but it is a testament to how long this song has been loved by so many people.
All right, so to be fair, Primetime, what is Primetime going
on? He's back? Just
I'm jamming out to the Killers, man.
Stir in the pot.
All right, I'm Jim Rutledge. He's Alex G. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Jim Rutledge. He's Alex G.
That's right.
She is Chrissy Birdsall. And Primetime War Shine Behind the Glass in the Everlight Solar Studio. We are presented by Coors Light. The Bollinger Blue, you know what to do.
And that's Crush Coors Light.
Before we get to pole dancing, one, I want to tell you about Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. If you're trying to think about something to do this week, you can go to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. That's where winners go. Winners go to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. Millions of dollars are won every single weekend at Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. So there's nothing to wait for. Just go to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison. According to Google, their AI overview, I asked, is Mr. Brightside good? Jeez. I got a drum roll. It says, yes, Mr. Brightside by The Killers is widely considered a great song. Now, I wanted to read this because we always wonder what makes a great song. Often praised for its catchy melody, relatable music about jealousy and enduring popularity, making it a classic anthem that remains relevant across generations. Many consider it one of the best songs of the 21st century.
I asked AI if Brian Gutekunst was a good GM, and it gave me these five things as the best things that he's done. Hiring Jeff Hafley, acquiring the Smith brothers. It just said Smith. Drafting Malik Heath, retaining Aaron Mosby, and evaluation of college film.
All right. What does that mean?
Exactly. AI has no idea, and I like that AI came to my defense, sort of, but also I don't think we need to trust it.
You're asking a robot to give you the qualifications of a general manager in the NFL?
I just looked up best moves that the general manager, Brian Gutekunst, made, and those were the five best moves.
Would you rather trust Google AI there or the guy who told me Garden State wasn't a good movie? I trust the guy who told me Garden State wasn't a good movie. I don't even know if it was
Wait,
a guy.
Jim, I was going to say, Jim said that it was a good movie.
Wasn't.
Was. I like
No, I'm saying I said oh. The guy who said it wasn't a good movie.
So there is a guy. Are you talking about yourself right now?
Maybe.
Okay. Do you think Brian Gutekunst is a good GM?
Yes.
All right. Then.
He's a good GM.
I trust that more than I trust AI.
I don't understand. I do not understand your hate for Goody.
I don't hate Goody. I just think that
you
Matt LaFleur
like
is
anything
better.
Anything he does. It feels like you just
I'm
think he's like
you,
so mid.
I'm putting out here that there are a lot of things that he has bungled, and we shouldn't be running away telling him he's the best when, you know, if he were the best, I think the Packers would be in the Super Bowl.
Can I give you a sentence here and make you feel a little emo before we take a break? It's Jason Wilde. So I Googled Morgan Wallen, and here's what it says. Although his success is often intertwined with controversy due to a past incident involving a racial slur,
yeah,
which significantly boosted his popularity despite negative connotations associated with it.
Disgusting. He's a bad guy.
I'm not. That's AI. I'm not saying people like it that, but like that is... I don't like that sentence.
I don't like that. The sentiment, the sentence, whatever.
Yeah. AI just... not great. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly presented by Coors Light.
You're listening to Jim, Matt, and Molly presented by Coors Light on 100.5 ESPN, ESPN Madison on YouTube, and Wisconsin On Demand.
Jason, quick
you
question.
You are one of one.
Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year.
Help me understand a little bit more clearly what you're asking.
Did you ever hear it called Don't Go Jason Waterfalls?
Is this Matt Hamilton?
So I kind of just thought of this question on the spot. So it needs to be workshopped a little. I'm not going to lie.
That's famous Matt.
Jason Wilde is on Jim, Matt, and Molly. Oh, snap! What's up with that? What's up with that?
What's up with that? What's up with that? Ooh. Jim, Matt, and Molly continues live from the Everlight Solar Studio. I'm Jim Rutledge. He is Alex G. Chrissy Birdsall with me as well. And Primetime Wollersheim. We are thrilled to be joined by Jason Wilde. And Jason, during the break, I just learned the artist. Was it Sexy Red?
Sexy Red.
Sexy Red.
Two, yeah, whatever.
And I said, reminds me of Lil' Kim back in the day. Jason, you're the only person who has any shot age-wise to know who to have ever heard of Lil' Kim. Have you ever heard of Lil' Kim?
I have heard of Lil' Kim. I have not heard of, what is it, Red Fox?
Yep, yep.
Is he on Sanford and Son?
Yep. It is Red Panda, and you can see her at the Madison Zoo. No. It's my kid's favorite exhibit, the Red Panda at the Madison
Zoo. I'm a capybara guy.
A what?
Capybara?
Isn't Red Panda the woman that rides a unicycle? And
is that her too? Okay, yeah, Chrissy's nodding yes, so yeah. There's also an actual Red Panda at the Madison Zoo.
Yeah, I saw that. Very cute. Yes.
So we'll start with the poll question that Evan Cohen put on our show, and we're just claiming it was plagiarized from our show for all the other shows. He did call a shot because he said, ask this question and every show will run with it. And I know that you made an appearance on your own show today, but I wanted to get your thoughts on our show about the question of which member of the Big Three is best at their job, Goody, LaFleur, or Jordan Love. I said it was Goody. Alex G, anti-Goody on this, and nobody thinks it's Jordan Love. But what was your answer out of those three, who's best at their job?
Well, I did not join my program, which Paul always loves it when I do that, theoretical days off.
I thought you did. Ryan said that the show calmed down when Jason showed. Oh, okay.
I didn't join when that question was being.
Oh, gotcha. Because I was getting bad information.
This is my first at bat with that question, so
okay.
That's great.
Yeah.
And you know, I am not the Goody fan, apologist, cheerleader that my cohort is. I don't hate him. I didn't love it when he lied to me, and I still think he was wrong about Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams, but he and I get along great. We got a lot of history together. We got a good working relationship. I'm not drinking beer out of his garage beer fridge, and he's not drinking bubblers out of mine. But I would say that he's, if you make me choose between the three, he's the one I'm picking.
Huh.
Now, that doesn't mean that there's not room for improvement, especially with his first-round track record. At least the third-round track record seems to have improved, although I don't know about the jury is obviously very much still out on Tyron Hopper, but I think Tucker Kraft has changed the mathematics there. So, you know, look, I think Matt LaFleur is probably second, and if he can figure out how to marry the Josh Jacobs style of running game with a play-action pass game and something that'll help the quarterback be more productive in that and scheme guys wide open like there used to be in this offense, then I think he's got a chance to overtake the GM in this poll. But for right now, even if G doesn't like it, the correct answer is the GM.
Agreed.
I do hear it. I don't think that it's a runaway. There's a lot of things that have felt made me feel like there are things to improve on that you've mentioned, whether it's the first round draft picks, whether it's the signing guys, his guys to these monster deals that feel completely unearned.
But all these guys have blemishes. His are just the least.
I hear that.
Yeah, I will say this. I'll say this. And Alex, you make a good point because I do think in fairness, you know, and Kenny Clark was drafted by Ted Thompson, but you know, he gave Kenny Clark the new contract in training camp. He could have just, he didn't have to do that, right? He gave the huge deal in October of 23 to Rashawn Gary. That has not been a good investment. And again, Jair, you know, when you miss 10 games each of the last two seasons and you're on your way out the door after a four-year, $84 million extension, no, those are all blemishes on his record. There's no doubt about that. So those are all fair criticisms, as is the fact that, you know, Eric Stokes has not been a very good first-round pick so far. Lucas Van Ness has not been a very good first-round pick. So Darnell Savage was not a good first-round pick. And then he got the fifth-year option on top of it. So those are all things that are very fair. I just think when you comp him to LaFleur, who I didn't think he had a great year. This was not his best year as a coach. I think Matt LaFleur would agree with that. And I think Jordan Love, if you want to say he regressed, if you want to say he didn't progress nearly enough, if you want to say he flatlined, however you want to look at it, you know, you were hoping for him to make a huge leap forward, and that did not happen. So I think, in fairness to you, Alex, I think I'm picking Goody almost by default.
And
out of the three.
Agreed.
That's fair. My one last gripe, and I just want to hear your thoughts on this. If Jordan Love is the marquee number one thing that Brian Gutekunst has done and probably will do as the general manager of the Green Bay Packers, and he's clearly not in the conversation for these three people, then how can he possibly be number one?
Yeah, and number one with a $55 million a year contract.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think we all, myself included, although not to the same degree as many others, saw what he did in the final eight regular season games and in the playoff game against Dallas. And some people crowned him. I would say that I was maybe guilty of overestimating him. Also, it was not popular to try and pump the brakes, whether it be on air or on social media, on, hey, maybe we're getting a little ahead of ourselves on just how good this guy is. I kept using the, there were times when Bears fans were really excited about Mitch Trubisky. He's obviously far better than him.
Mm-hmm.
But because he didn't make the leap that you were expecting or that the Packers were expecting, or let's be honest, Jordan was expecting, I think it's a fair critique to say that this is a pivotal offseason and third year as a starter. Is he going to catapult himself into the top five, top six conversation of quarterbacks? Is he going to be kind of a 6-12 guy? Like, what is he going to be? Because, you know, and I don't think of it in terms of the contract, because I just think that's the cost of doing business now at that position. Like, Trevor Lawrence doesn't deserve that much money either. Tua doesn't deserve that much money either. We saw Jared Goff when the money was on the table. He didn't deserve it either, right? I think it's just what everybody's getting paid, and I can't wait to see what Brock Purdy gets. So I don't look at it from that perspective. I look at it from, we were looking at this guy and really talking about, you know, Tausch saying he's going to be in the top three of the MVP balloting in 2024. You know, that did not come anywhere close to happening. And I think next year he has to be talked about in that breath, or then you really start to wonder just how good is he. And he will have the opportunity to prove himself to be very good, pretty good, decent, or not good enough. And if he ends up being not good enough, that's when you start to think, now what? Because you've paid him, the expectations are there. This is such a pivotal year for him.
I agree, and I'm curious. I'm betting on, just with his age and time in this offense and the amount of starts he's had in college and in the pros, that he's going to get marginally better, and I don't know where that puts him. But we obviously have to wait and see. Maybe Sean Mannion can unlock something that Tom Clemens couldn't. Speaking of assistants, Anthony Campanelli, obviously he's going to Duval. It was. Side note, Jason, Liam Cohen, how the Bears dodged that disaster. Like, that screams Chicago Bears move with the Duval and the whole thing and the negative Riz and aura that he has. How they dodged that bullet is beyond me. But I'm counting my lucky stars that they dodged it. Campanelli, what's the loss for the Packers? Obviously, when you got a guy being pulled in to be a defensive coordinator, he's highly thought of.
Yeah, and you know, he was in the conversation in San Francisco before Sala didn't get a head coaching job and wound up back there. He was in the conversation for Penn State, which, you know, you might think, well, he's in the NFL now. But he spent 15 years in the college game before breaking into the NFL with the Dolphins in 2020. You know, he comes from coaching royalty in New Jersey. His dad is a legendary high school coach. He and his three brothers are all coaches at different levels. Look, I am a fan. I thought he was going to be one of those cartoon character guys because of what I saw on Hard Knocks when he was with the Dolphins. But he's got a lot more substance than that. And what I like about him is that he's not just a screamer who drops a bunch of F-bombs. Like, he understands that different players need different styles of coaching. And you treat everybody fairly and equally, but you don't treat them the exact same way. And I think that's what makes a good coach. He's really smart. I think that this is a significant loss. Now, that doesn't mean that Sean Duggan, who kind of served as the de facto assistant linebackers coach, is a guy that was with Halfley at Ohio State in 19, was with Halfley at BC for the 4 years Halfley was there, including 1 year as the co-defensive coordinator for the Eagles. That doesn't mean that he can't step in and continue to help Edgerrin Cooper to develop. But remember, Isaiah McDuffie and Eric Wilson are both free agents. So there could be some changes in terms of who plays in their rotation. And is Tyron Hopper going to be able to make a jump and be ready to be a part-time player for them? Are they going to bring back Wilson, or are they saying at age 30, we don't want guys of that age on our team anymore, we'll find somebody else who's cheaper? So that is a position in flux, and I think if you look at what Anthony Campanile did, you know, he got the best out of Quay Walker that anyone has, and he continued to bring Edgerrin Cooper along. We all saw his splash play ability, but what went down with Edgerrin Cooper as the season wore on were the knuckleheaded rookie mistakes. And I always bring this up because in the opener against Philly, he had a tackle for loss, and you were like, wow, right? This is the kid who barely played in training camp. This is impressive. And then a few plays later, he lines up and is completely the wrong spot. There, you can see on the tape, like, Xavier McKinney and other guys screaming at him that he's in the wrong location. The Eagles snap the ball, and Saquon Barkley runs right through where he's supposed to be on his way to a touchdown. Like, you saw fewer of those types of plays with Edgerrin Cooper, and to me, while that's a credit to Edgerrin Cooper, it's also a credit to his position coach, who got him to make fewer rookie mistakes. So not having him is a loss. It doesn't mean that they're going to forfeit their games or that Jeff Hafley's defense is going to tumble to the bottom of the rankings, but he was a valuable piece of their staff, and not having him does not make them better.
That was really good. I didn't know that about Hopper and in the early mistakes that he made, and I don't really remember a whole lot of what he did throughout the year in terms of really stepping up. Before you go, I do have one random question for you, Jason. Have you ever done a polar plunge?
Well, I don't know how to swim, first of all. I mean, I know how to kind of tread water. When the girls were little, I took swimming lessons from their teacher after they would get done at the YWCA.
Huh.
And so I kind of know how to float, but I am not a strong swimmer, and I don't like being cold. So I think the polar plunge question just answered itself.
Yeah, resounding no, huh?
So I want to follow up on this, because Alex G shared a story yesterday, Jason, that was troubling when Evan Cohen was on, because he basically...
Not troubling.
Do we have the... Ryan, I know you don't make things back there. Do you actually have the audio, the little drop of what he said?
I do not. I'll have to take a minute to get
that's
there.
Fine. That's fine. So basically...
He's got Duval, though.
He does. He had it earlier. He had it earlier in the show, so I didn't know if he had it queued up in the hotkey. So Alex G, when we're talking to Evan Cohen, he out of the blue says, hey, do they still give out Oreos at dry cleaners? And I said, I've never heard of that, Jason. And so he followed up and said that in his small town of Plymouth, Wisconsin, the dry cleaner would give him a unwrapped Oreo
from a jar.
From a jar, not that much better, in a toxic chemical-filled dry cleaner
facility. I didn't say that. His words.
That, you know, his mom was with him, but he would just be given a cookie and he would eat it. Now, I said, one, my wife would never, and I would agree with her, ever let one of my children eat an unwrapped Oreo, especially from a dry cleaner, her present or not. But Have you ever, do you have anything close to this encounter? Because apparently also in that same town, Alex G got fudgesicles from the restaurant in town on the second floor. So how Alex G is alive is
it's not
me.
Just me. That was everyone. Everyone got fudgesicles from Dino.
Well, and then the follow-up to that, Jason, is I was playing basketball this morning and someone comes up to me and says, hey, I was listening to the show yesterday. I'm from Plymouth. I've never heard of anyone giving out Oreos at a dry cleaner. So... if you had a choice, would you rather do a polar plunge, this is one of our poll questions, or eat a loose Oreo?
All right, so first of all, Paula grew up in Sheboygan, and I know there's some weird stuff that goes on in that Plymouth, Kohler, Sheboygan region.
Don't forget Falls. Sheboygan Falls, weird.
That said, no, but remember, too, like, once upon a time, now, again, Alex is young. We are both old.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like, there was a time where you would go to a bar, and there were, like, bowls of, like, loose, like, bar mix
or
beer nuts.
Pretzels, peanuts,
You just put your, meat hook right in there and gobble it up.
Yeah.
And the girls, you know, you're on speaker, so Paula and the girls are grossed out right now because they are... total germaphobes. I, on the other hand, my parents were such hacks at parenting that, first of all, I never got to stay home from school no matter how sick I was.
Same.
Like, I could have vomited in the morning and it was, you're still going to school today.
I have to fight that urge today, Jason. My daughter stayed home and in my head, I still want to do my dad sort of like, you can go to school. And my wife's like, you didn't like it when you were a kid. She's staying home. So I was same upbringing there. Yes.
Yeah, and I overcorrected, like, again, and this is not a humble brag, a straight A student, and I actually tell the girls, it's okay if you get a B, I want you to get a B, so it's a whole different realm in our house now, but I have such a, and Paula says this, every time I do get sick, then I have to hear about it, but I have such a strong immune system. Because I was exposed to so many illnesses as a kid, and cigarette smoke.
Oh, man.
That I'm like blind here.
You cut out a little bit there. I think we lost you. Maybe that was, I don't know, some interference there.
No, I'm still here. I wasn't sure if you heard me say that I'm a borderline superhero. So,
oh, there you go.
Perfect.
The bottom line is... I am not afraid. I will eat that whole jar of Oreos, quite frankly.
Let's go, Jason.
So all right.
That's
well,
my guy.
Next time you're in town, we'll have to have a loose Oreo eat-off.
But here's the thing. I used to go to Clinky Cleaners because I wore so many dress shirts back when I was actually, like, you know, trying to impress girls and stuff. And then I married Paula, and I just wore hoodies and shorts all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know the last time I've been in a dry cleaner. So do I get free dry cleaning if I eat the whole jar? Like, what's the deal?
I don't know. I haven't been a dry cleaner in a long time. We'll have to find that out. Well, maybe we'll give the folks at Clinky a call. Maybe they have some sort of promotion where you eat a jar. It's like, give Jason Wilde a cookie, and he'll, how's that called? The give a mouse a
feed
cookie.
Give
a mouse a cookie, and he'll ask for something the next time. So, Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
All right. That's Jason Wilde. We'll wrap up the show on the other side. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly, presented by Coors Light.
Do they still give out Oreos at dry cleaners?
What?
Huh? Is that not a thing?
That's never a thing.
No.
Hey, this is Matt's Chicago Doppelganger. You're listening to Jim, Matt, and Molly presented by Coors Light on 100.5 ESPN Madison.
They dance above me as I sing. Wrapping up a Fish Friday. Man, I love this song. This song is a jam band classic from Fish. Bouncing around the room. This is one, like, Fish is on my bucket list. I think Fish is would be viewed as a high-end band.
High-end.
Like, they put out good music. Yeah, they put out good music. And I guess, and again, we're going to wrap up the show on this because what do we got, like 90 seconds here?
We got about 2 minutes.
All right, 2 minutes, even better. Primetime Orsheim, Alex G, Christy Birdsall, Jim
Alex
Millage.
G!
Chris, you can chime in on this if you want. But I think the way to define, like, good music and good, it's kind of like good movies. Like, necessarily, sometimes the movies that win Best Picture are not, like, the most, like, entertaining or appealing movies. Like, Nosferatu, I really enjoyed that. And that movie was, I would say, a 10 out of 10 for like how it's filmed, how it's acted, all of it.
You know what's going to drive you crazy? The only Nosferatu that I really understand is the SpongeBob reference.
Okay, that's fine. It's a horror movie that they just basically shot for shot remade. My wife hated it. It was just boring. Like, I didn't think it was bad. She thought the acting was good. It was just boring and slow. But that was objectively a really good movie. But it depends, like, what you're consuming things for. So, like, if you just want music for to kind of hit your, again, the sugar high, then, like, a Morgan Wallen and some of those songs are there for that. The Johnny Ray song, yeah, whatever. Like, yeah, that's what they're there for. They're not good. They're good at one specific thing that can give you one feeling. I think good music, it also gets you there not in a formulaic way. So, like, the fish has got God knows how many instruments playing.
And yeah,
how
none
many
of them.
Melodies going on at one time, how many different layers. Like, we were just listening to the song Under the Boardwalk because you sang it when you were younger. There's multiple singers singing at different levels and different. So like,
it's just a quartet. But yeah,
it's still more advanced than what Morgan Wallen or any of the pop people are putting out. And that's my point, is that there's good, and it doesn't mean you're not, like, I'm not questioning your tastes. I'm more questioning, like, just own it. Like, you can say, I like Morgan Wallen. It's not Masterpiece Theater.
Like,
it's just
Morgan Wallen.
I'm not
so
saying
like,
you.
Yes.
I'm just saying in general. So, like, for me, there's plenty of things I say, I like it. Like,
my
Taylor
mom
Swift
sits
is like,
down.
I like Taylor Swift. I'm not putting her on the level like Tyler Childers. I do think she's better than, like, a Morgan Wallen.
Oh, yeah.
I think for a pop singer, Taylor Swift's elite. I think Beyonce is amazing like that, too.
It's just like my mom every day or every year. Okay, well we're out of time. He's just 30 seconds, 10 seconds. Sign
Where'd
off,
you learn
Jim?
To count? It's been Jim Matt Molly presented by Coors Light.
At a fish concert.